This is the Taser Update for March 25th, 2018. I'm Filippo D'Onofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Chris Elogi.
No shortage of content this week. We had the Nintendo Nindies Showcase and GDC going on pretty much at the same time. So it was pretty much guaranteed that we'd have at least one interesting story to talk about. But this week we got quite a few. So, yeah, I look forward to getting into that. Yeah, Nintendo is kind of firing on all cylinders at this point. We can't really deny that anymore, can we?
Nope.
Yeah. So the Switch, yeah, success. Even though people are talking about hardware revisions for Switch already, things are like a year old. Guys, like, yeah, calm your jets there. So
sit down and count your money a little bit. You've earned it.
So good stuff coming, and we'll get to that in a bit. But first, we've been playing some stuff. I talked about it a little bit on Let's Weekend. I started off with Titan Quest, and it's good. It's a perfectly fine port of a PC game. They did a pretty good job porting it. I didn't run into any real performance issues, even with a lot of stuff going on screen at once. It seemed to run pretty well. That may be because I'm playing it on a Pro with boost mode on, so that kind of gives it a little extra grunt. But yeah, there's no actual Pro mode support in the game that I can see. Maybe that'll come later. I don't know, because it would be nice to have 4K or whatever going on. I mean, I'm pretty sure the PS4 Pro could handle it on a game like that. I mean, it does it with Diablo 3, so.
Yep. Yeah, though I don't know that THQ's other ports have supported Pro specifically.
Yeah. I don't
think they're being kind of bare bones.
Didn't the Saints? No, the Saints Row port didn't either.
Those were quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they're just sticking with base PS4, which, you know, isn't a bad way to go, because it basically means everybody can play, but still, it would be nice to have some enhancements here and there, but I'm not displeased by this port. It plays fine, it's enjoyable, and, well, at the end of the day, it's still Titan Quest, so it's like one of the most underrated games of this genre, so the more people that can get to play this game, the better, so... that's it for me. What about you, Pat?
Mainly I've been playing Soul Calibur 2 and trying to get everything unlocked in between massive sessions of gathering videos for World Warriors. Obviously we're in the last couple weeks before the site launch, and so I'm trying to get everything in order in terms of content, and that's going pretty well. I'm just kind of falling all over myself trying to get the last few details sorted out, and it should be good.
Yeah. Also sounds like you're dealing with a bit of a head cold, too.
Little bit.
So, lovely. God damn it, Winter, why do you suck? Yeah.
Well, I've got a 5-day weekend coming up, so...
Yeah, it should be good.
That will help.
My turn?
Yep.
All right, well, I am still hip deep in Breath of the Wild. I'm just on the cusp of conquering my third Divine Beast, specifically the Camel one, as soon as I can figure out how to kill Thunderblight Ganon. Because that guy is really fast, and he can kill you in about two hits.
Yep.
But man, that I am continually stunned at just how good the puzzle design and in this game is. Like stuff where like actual puzzles based around physics and circuitry and just moving a ball around a maze, just all kinds of neat stuff. And the Divine Beast in particular are really just brilliant pieces of puzzle design in and of themselves. Seriously, I am floored at how good this stuff is. And I still haven't even tackled any of the DLC stuff yet. So
yeah, you're probably better off doing all of the main game stuff first and going for it, because I think the game levels itself towards that.
Yeah. Also, there is nothing funnier than Link having to put on a woman's outfit to sneak into the Gerudo town.
That part.
Very interesting, I guess.
And the only reason it works so well is because Link's design is androgynous enough that no one would notice.
Yeah. So.
That's just hilarious. I don't think they could have gotten away with that until now.
No, not I don't think they could have even gotten away with it 5 years ago. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, remember, you know, I mean, they were doing everything from like, what was it? Like, I think it was the Minish Cap.
Yeah.
Walking into on there's like you walk into one of the buildings and it's like an artist sketching a nude hippo model or something. And they like had to censor out the boobs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, so I'm playing that and also playing Yakuza 0. Mm. On my PS4. And, yeah, it's Yakuza 0. What else can you say? You know, it's basically a great beat 'em up based around a gritty crime story that also has side activities that are so in-depth they could basically be their own games.
Yeah.
And at least one or two examples are their own games.
Yeah.
The tens of thousands of yen I've wasted trying to play Puzzle Pool alone, because the pool simulator in that game is just literally is a game in and of itself.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, just, you know, doing that, going playing Space Harrier. And the best part is like, unlike in Shenmue, where you're on the clock, you don't really have to deal with time in this game.
Hmm.
So you can do all this to your heart's content.
Yeah.
Isn't that a fantastic change?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, the arcade closes in 5 minutes. God damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, at least, you know, in Shenmue, the best you could do was you had to eventually, you know, buy yourself a Saturn and play it at Ryu's house, but whatever.
Yeah.
But that's what I've been playing. So, Chris, what about you?
Well, I've been playing a good bit of Madden 18 for this week. Mostly dipping into the Ultimate Team mode and trying that out. And trying to use the Twitch Prime stuff, which unfortunately doesn't bank as much as I thought it would, because I've been checking on that for most of the season. But it only gave me the last few people that were on it. So I think they expire some of the earlier stuff, so that was a little bit of a disappointment.
Mm.
But otherwise, that mode works pretty well. It still is really good. They've massaged over the years some of the less player-friendly stuff, like contracts where you had only so much that you could play a certain player before mm-hmm. you had to get specific cards that could extend that stuff. Now you just kind of have like a bank of that stuff. I have like 5,000 contract points, which it just tells me, hey, this player, their bank is up, and you can just say, all right, just give them, you know, 30 games worth of this stuff. And mm-hmm. it barely puts a dent into that. Like, I lost like 30-some points out of that, so I basically can play with any player I want as long as I need them. So that's nice. The challenge is I got a bunch of solo ones as well as stuff that's multiplayer or co-op focused. Mm-hmm. I've been sticking to the solo stuff, and the only problem is there's a few hundred of them. And so, and a lot of them are, you know, put into like series, specific series, that if you complete them all, you get, you know, a special reward. And it's kind of hard to know what to start with.
Mm.
And so you end up going around, checking out some of them that are just as simple as like, oh, get, a touchdown on this drive, you know, in three plays. It might give you like a bonus objective to get some more coins out of it. But, and it's stuff that, you know, takes a minute or two, that's it. Versus just playing, even when they go to full games, it's usually like 2 minute quarters. So it's not really much time investment, so it's easier to sort of churn through stuff. quicker, which works pretty well. And I also played a bit of the story mode, the long shot, which is pretty good. There are definitely parts of it that it's like, I don't think that's how the Combine works. They have a lot of like regional stuff where it's like, oh, you do well at the regional and you go to the super regional. And then they have some TV producers that show up and it's like, hey, we'd like you to be on our long shot show. We're going to feature, you know, one player who we think has the potential to become an actual pro. And so we're going to show like a reality short sort of show, which then he finds out, no, we actually asked three others as well to do this. And they all thought the same thing, that they were the only one. So it's like really dick move for pure like reality show stakes. And they just some interesting stuff with that mode where they actually ask you to like identify specific things about plays and formations and all that sort of stuff, which is pretty neat because typically you're not asked to know, you know, what sort of formation is this, you know, what position is this player in this formation, you know, that sort of stuff. Typically the drills are all about teaching you just specific mechanics for how the game works, but this one kind of does some neat stuff with that. And as you play more of that, you unlock stuff for Madden Ultimate Team. So I have the main person, the quarterback in the – he's my starter on my Madden Ultimate Team. He's like rated 91, so it's pretty good. I have no reason to use any actual quarterbacks. And I have his buddy, his wide receiver buddy, who is the high school version of it, which his rating is not great, so I don't really use him. But I have like the uniforms from his college, his high school team, and they had some specific challenges, solo challenges tied around that stuff, which was weird jumping into before I played the story mode, because it's like, why the hell is there's like Texas-ass coach in a cowboy hat on the sidelines? Weird stuff like that, but yeah, it's pretty good. It's, and sort of in contrast, I played a little bit of Madden NFL 25, which was the launch title for this generation, which was the game where they didn't really add anything or improve the graphics too much, just to get it to be more of a full feature game right at launch, which was nice for purely the feature set. But going back to that, that game looks like shit. I guess the Xbox One version probably had worse resolution stuff in it. So there are points where I cannot read the names on the back of the uniforms. And that's like, holy crap. That game, they started really low and definitely have improved a great deal over the last few years. And the other thing I noticed is the servers are down. They took off the servers for that game.
Yeah, so you can't play that after a couple of years.
Yeah.
Which, when you're running a service specifically about playing your old games, that seems like maybe you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
It makes me want to download a bunch of other games to try and figure out, you know, how many games can you actually play online with your EA Access subscription?
That might be a good feature, actually.
Yeah, that's what I'm probably going to be doing. Because especially when trying to load up Madden NFL 25, it takes a while just to get to the main menus because it's like, all right, we're going to the EA servers. Yeah, we're still checking.
Hello?
I think at one point I even had it just get into an endless loading cycle. Mm. So it's like, well, I gotta quit out of this game because I'm not going to sit here for 20 minutes hoping it eventually lets me – because I clicked on the Ultimate Team mode. It's like, well, can I still play this? Nope. Mm. And the closest thing I can get to online functionality in that is getting like the little news ticker.
Which is probably an RSS feed that somebody forgot about.
Yeah. But it was interesting seeing like current news when playing with a version of the Cleveland Browns that's like 6 years old at this point, I think.
Yeah.
5 or 6 years old. And it's like, oh yeah, this, I haven't even thought about this player in 5 years. I forgot these players were even on the team at one point. Yeah, it was neat to jump into that. Definitely doesn't play as well, doesn't look good at all. And there's weird points where they have like little cutscenes where the resolution gets even worse. It's like, oh my god. Mm. You could definitely tell that was a port from the last gen, but yeah, it was neat to jump into that stuff. And maybe we'll end up doing a EA Access online server check. Because, yeah, I could Google search it, but I'd rather show it how it affects the games. Like, what each game lets you actually do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that'll be interesting to check out. As for games that are actually new, MLB The Show 18, I've been playing that. I got it on Friday after work. Had just enough time to install it before we did last weekend. So I've been playing it the past 2 days, and it's really good. I would probably say it's the best sports game out there, especially the simulation ones. And still, it does things that nobody else does. When you jump in for the first time, it actually presents you with what I think it calls like the Control Explorer, which it shows you the different control options for batting, pitching, fielding, and base running. Lets you try them all out, explains what the controls are, and you get to pick which one you want to have as your default on your settings. Mm. It's like nobody else really does that. They just throw you into the default, and you have to figure out, oh, I could actually have something this controlled differently if I want to.
Yeah.
You have to dig into the settings. It's like, no, this really makes it easy to understand the differences, which I didn't really change anything from what I've played with in the past, but it's still really nice to get a chance to try out some of the other stuff and see if maybe something, becomes my new favorite. Because my pitching option is essentially the one that EA put in the MVP NCAA baseball games, which is you pull the right stick down to a certain point on the meter and then push it up either to the left or right, depending on where you want to locate the pitch. And it works really well, especially if you can nail it over and over again. You can basically do whatever you want. And it's really skill-based, so if you're good at it, you can really just mow down people, which is really cool. It has less RNG as some of the other options, which is what I really like about that game. I've been playing some of the Road to the Show stuff. I was able to continue my save from last year's game, so I'm using the same pitcher I mentioned in the review for 17, which still that's something nobody else does. EA and 2K have not even attempted to put anything like that to let you continue saves from previous games.
Yeah. Which EA had made rumblings about that, but I don't think they ever actually followed through with it.
Yeah, it's like, hey, this gives people more of a reason to play your next game. Because they can get the new features and all that, as well as not have to start over every single time. But yeah, once I jumped in, they immediately prompt you to check out some of the new features. Which for Road to the Show, there is a new like archetype system. So instead of just earning XP and then just putting that in any of the various attributes you have to kind of try to make like a super player, they have archetypes. So for my starting pitcher, it was like a flamethrower, somebody that has filthy stuff, and I forget what the third one was. Like with someone that has really good control. So it's like my guy, I had already spec'd it so that he has like a 99 on his fastball speed. So I can just throw it 100 miles an hour easily. So I picked the flamethrower. And so that caps certain attributes and sort of makes it a little bit more realistic so that pitchers that typically focus on the fastball is not going to be as good as that with their other pitches, typically. And they show you examples of different pitchers that fit those different archetypes and all that. So, and also, they introduce this whole thing where you're not getting XP anymore. Not in the traditional sense. Because in the previous games, you just earned XP for playing well and various things that would happen. This time around, you just get rated for every at-bat. Like, oh, plus on your break, you're breaking on your pitch, or plus on your control, plus on your fastball or whatever. It just naturally upgrades those stats. over time as you do it.
Oh, so it's like Skyrim now.
Yeah, it's kind of pretty natural and less of the game stuff. So if you mess up, you give up a home run on your fastball, it'll like ding you on control or something like that. But it's also over the course of the game, so if you do more good than bad in that stat, you know, it'll make up for it.
Yeah.
So you can regress if you do actually play poorly, but you can also improve stuff naturally, which works really well. Which is nice. I kind of like the jack of all trades kind of thing where you can just make a super player. Because I remember one of my first basemen I made like 5 or 6 years ago. He was a guy that could hit home runs and also steal bases, which is not a common thing. Like a guy that could be fast as well as have a good amount of power and hitting to him. So that's something you can't really make too much anymore. It's the same thing with NBA 2K. I've sort of done some of that stuff where I think in 11 when they first started having the good career modes in there, my guy could shoot threes and you know rebound really well and dunk and all that stuff, could do most things pretty well. And that's not really a thing you can do, at least not as fast as I did it. I did in one season, coming from backup to being a starter, kind of forcing my way to becoming one of the best players pretty quickly. You can't really do that. It's a slow grind in the NBA 2K games now. And they definitely force those sort of archetypes that are more harsh, considering how the actual game of basketball, versatility is really a big thing for the NBA right now, where you got big men that can pass as well as point guards and shoot the three as well. So versatility is really a big thing, but NBA 2K doesn't let you really do that, which is sort of the big shame. Also, in Road to the Show, I ran into a bug that I ran into last year's game, which is my guy wears glasses, and in the menus, when they show your player model, my guy doesn't have glasses on. It's like, this should be something pretty simple, you would think. This is also the same team that usually when you pre-order the games, the MLB games, they give you like 30 themes and 30, I think it's just 30 themes that are one for each team. Yeah. And the one they gave for Cleveland last year had a player named Jose Ramirez, who is a big deal. He's an MVP candidate this past year. And they had his player model in the theme correct. But the player that was on the billboard, the Jumbotron, was a different Jose Ramirez.
Whoops.
Like, oh, you guys don't even know who this guy is, even though he's been one of the best players in the game. They never fixed it, as far as I could tell. I think even they messed up his picture in the game, like his player photo. They messed it up at launch, and he was not very happy about that. I think they've fixed it. But it's like, you know, there's, especially when you have more common names like that for Latino players, you should really be specific and make sure you're not putting the wrong Jose Ramirez.
Yeah.
It's weird, things like that. It's like, you guys are really detailed about a lot of this stuff, but there's a couple things that fall through the cracks. Also been playing Diamond Dynasty, which is their sort of ultimate team style thing, which has more of a variety of stuff to it. So there's like a weird turn-based strategy game mode in it. It's called, I think it's just called Control, where your custom team sort of set up shop, I think it's in like one of the Dakotas, I think. It's somewhere between Colorado and Minnesota. That'd be somewhere around there. And you kind of set up shop there, and then just slowly move out and take over hex-based grids around it, sort of move your quote-unquote fan base around to take out territories and start trying to attack other teams, which involves, instead of a battle, is a game. You play like a three-inning game, something real quick. And the first one I played, I was going towards the Minnesota team, and it went from 3 innings to 19 in extra innings because we got in a stalemate to the point where we were on our last pitchers, and the Minnesota pitcher that was last was going for about six innings. These are relief pitchers that maybe go two innings at max. So it was kind of weird. Yeah, he was kind of dead. I eventually won by pure attrition. Just got a couple runs right in that last inning and then made sure the other team didn't get any, which was crazy because I was like, oh, I'm just going to play a quick game here and end up lasting for like an hour and a half. I managed to get the last hour of it up on my YouTube channel. Just like, I just got to put this up somewhere because this is crazy.
Ridiculous.
And I think it's from fifth inning onward. This is the last hour. So that was just ridiculous. I've been playing more of it in other ways. And yeah, not having that much trouble scoring. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun. They got rid of some of the things that were kind of annoying. The programs were sort of like a, not really challenges. They're sort of like just little, hey, you know, you have this player, like Babe Ruth. I have a Babe Ruth, and it's like, hey, there's a few things you need to do with him to complete these like missions that you upgrade his program and unlock some more stuff, like extra packs or another Babe Ruth card, things like that. There's still presentation stuff on that. It's not great. Where I've got like 50 of these different programs that I could potentially be working on at any point. It's kind of hard to know which ones I can actually do stuff for. Hmm. Some of them require you to have a specific player. It's like, I have not had that drop yet. And others, it's just like, well, you have to do this specific thing. I kind of just wish they had like a list. Like, here's all the stuff, the challenges that these programs are asking you to do. And these are the ones you can actually do and sort of keeping you abreast on the progress you're doing. It's not great. One of the nice things they did actually for Road to the Show is they got rid of the microtransactions. You could actually buy the experience points for real money. So that's real nice, especially since they got rid of experience points completely. So that was one of the nice things they did. It's still there for just the pure in-game currency. So if you want to buy some of that to get packs, you can do that for the Diamond Dynasty stuff, but otherwise you're not paying to, you know, max out your character in Road to the Show anymore, which is nice because the whole thing is you're kind of building up your player, and it's a lot of fun. Nice, quick stuff. One of the other things they added is retro mode is now a part of franchise mode. It's one of the options you can play each game with versus just like locking to one player or just playing a normal game or just having it sim it and then put you in non-critical moments. So you can just do essentially play a retro game that has all the franchise mode depth that the whole game has, which is really nice and is real bad news for RBI Baseball. It's like, okay, here's the game that has everything that anybody would need that wants that retro style gameplay. Yeah. And now you guys, now the only, you know, positive they have is they're on other platforms.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's been pretty much it.
All right. So let's get into some announcements because there have been a few.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we'll start off with a Street Fighter TV show has been greenlit. Normally we don't really cover TV shows too often, but this will make an exception for. Yeah, it seems like they're going to be retelling the story of the World Warrior again. We'll see how it's going to turn out.
Do we know what format it's going to be?
Well, I think, no. The studio that does this did the animated animated web series from a few years back.
Oh, okay.
So the assumption is that it's probably going to be another unanimated TV
series. It's live action.
This one's live action. Okay.
Okay.
So it was Assassin's Fist.
Ooh. And I saw the wrong show. So, yeah, there's possibilities there if, you know, they treat it right. And the problem with the entire, you know, World Warrior storyline is if you really, like, think about it, it makes no goddamn sense whatsoever. So they have to write their way around that. Which a few studios have already done. So it is definitely possible. And so, yeah, I'm kind of interested to see what this turns into.
I'm looking at the production company, the stuff they're highlighting as their big works. There's like Designated Survivor, The Walking Dead, I, Tonya, Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, Peppa Pig, for parents out there, and the Wu-Tang Clan. They do like
quite the diverse portfolio.
And it's like, oh, I would not have expected the Wu-Tang Clan to be part of this whole empire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now there's going to be a Street Fighter show coming out of them, and
yeah.
I'm intrigued. I'm very, very much intrigued. So we'll keep an eye on this one. Probably end up on streaming services, as these usually always end up being. So let's see. Next up, we have more remasters are coming. Is this September we're going to get Zone of the Enders 2 remaster for PS4?
I think this was already announced. This was announced at PSX.
Yeah,
this is that PS4 and PSVR thing that they were working on.
Yeah, it was announced that it was exist. The new thing is that we're getting the release now.
September.
Date. Yeah,
that's good.
So yeah, cool stuff. I don't know where the first one is. It'd be nice if we got that too.
Yeah.
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 I'm guessing if this does well, that'll probably happen.
Yeah.
Like Konami has much else going on.
No.
If you're jumping into a story like in the middle of it, you're not going to understand what the hell's going on. But
yeah. So this one was more anime than the original.
Yeah. This one was anime as fuck, but anyway.
Yeah. It's like this and the ports of the Bomberman thing.
Yeah.
To the other consoles with their own exclusive characters.
Hmm. Yep.
Okay, so what else we got? Oh, yeah. Fire Pro Wrestling World. We haven't gotten one of these in a while, especially over here.
Well, it's been on PC for a while.
Yeah. But, it's coming this summer to the PS4.
Yep.
Yeah, so you'll actually get to play your Fire Pro on your console in the West. And, of course, that comes with all the licenses that you would expect it to.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're also adding actual licenses.
Yeah.
I think World Japan Pro.
Yeah,
I think they signed a deal for this.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
As they're going to have actual people in here along with all the fake, quote-unquote fake wrestlers.
Okay, that's a game changer.
Yeah. Also, you're going to be able to share your custom wrestlers online, so.
Well, you better.
All that will, yeah. I hope they got a way to turn all the Steam Workshop stuff over to PS4 as well.
Yeah. That would be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Because
World relies very heavily on Steam Workshop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing really stopping anybody from hooking into Steam Workshop on PS4. Mm. Just people tend not to because it's an extra layer they have to go through. Because it's an extra sign-in.
Yeah.
So, finally we got the announcement trailer for Pixel Junk Monsters 2, which looks amazing.
Yeah. Out May 25th. $15, PS4, Switch, and PC. It looks really cool. It has a bit more of a 3D aspect to it. You can get behind the back of the Tiki Man, sort of go set up your towers, but it also looks very much like claymation-ish. Definitely using the tech that they made for the Tomorrow Children. Mm-hmm. And it looks really good as a result.
Yep.
I guess we're going to have 4-player online co-op, as well as local, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, and it's only a couple months away, too. So
yeah. Hmm. Yeah, this is another Spike Chunsoft publisher thing. They announced a few games.
Yeah, they were busy at GDC this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has like a weird Japanese FMV game for the West, which is really weird to see, but also a new game from the Danganronpa people.
Yeah.
It's going to be like it's a survival game.
Yeah.
And it looks awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it looks pretty good. And then the other one's just he's surprised it's a visual novel.
Hmm.
It's another one.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, definitely watch the trailer for people that haven't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really definitely well worth a couple minutes. So let's get into Nintendo this week. Another showcase, this time focusing on independent games. Not a lot of big announcements. There were like about 20 or so that I can count here. Yeah, about 20. Some games we knew about, some games we didn't. Some games were kind of surprises and very pleasant ones. So, yeah, let's get into some of them. I never played Kentucky Route Zero, but now it's coming to the Switch.
Yep, so they finally finished that game after several years.
Yeah, so that's done. The complete version will be on the Switch. Runner 3, we've talked about before. That's coming.
Yeah, that's. I think it's coming out around the same time as Pixel Junk Monsters 2.
Yeah.
I want to say. It's around the same date. Yep. Just the same day as Dark Souls on the Switch. So that's a big day for Switch people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to have no money.
Yeah, you're going to have no money, but at least you have lots of content. So, you know, you'll be able to start building up that Switch backlog like everybody else has been.
Yeah.
Let's see. We got here Wargroove, another game I have not had the chance to play.
Yeah, that's the Advanced Wars style game from the same publisher as Stardew Valley.
Yeah.
I think it's from their native team, not the one that made Stardew Valley or anything like that.
Yeah.
Mm. Which
looks good.
Yeah.
What else we got here? Hollow Knight, which has been around for a little while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were just talking about this week. There's a date coming in the near future. I don't think they announced it yet.
Yeah.
Just like, hey, we're almost there.
Yeah. It's almost done. We got, let's see, Hyper Light Drifter, which is a game Brandon is a big fan of.
Oh, yes, and they got a good coup getting this, because, yep. Holy crap, if there is a game that is made for the Switch, it's this.
Yeah. Yeah, just don't throw your Switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
you might want to.
It's a hard game, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. So that's another good one. Dead Cells, we talked about that last week. Kind of a Metroidvania-style roguelike. Looks good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been waiting for that to come off of PC. So that one will be one I'll check out.
Yeah.
Mm.
Let's see, what else we got here? Lightfall. This one I'm not familiar with either.
Yeah, Lightfall, let's see. It's a platforming adventure game from the... From Bishop Games, I'm not sure who that is. Let's see the description. You got the master your surroundings by manipulating the Shadow Core, a magical box used to propel them into the air. There's a speedrun mode. You can race against friends and the top players on the leaderboards. Yeah, it's launching first on Switch as a timed exclusive this spring.
Mm.
Yeah, they have a lot of trailers for this on their YouTube channel, Nintendo YouTube channel. So. Check that out if you haven't watched the actual showcase itself.
Yeah. The actual showcase itself is not that long, so it might probably be worth just watching the whole thing. Let's see. Just Shapes and Beats.
Yeah, this one is a musical bullet hell game. Navigate deadly shapes, solo or in local or online co-op multiplayer. Auto soundtrack composed by 20 chiptune artists. Time console exclusive on the Switch this summer.
Yeah, what's interesting about these is the number of timed exclusives that they're getting.
Yeah, they had a lot of either complete exclusives or timed exclusives.
Yeah, and part of that to me seems like the fact that Steam has turned into such a cesspool. Nobody really wants to they might release there on Switch, but on Steam, but they end up getting lost. So the indie devs tend to do better on the Switch, it looks like. PS4 is starting to suffer from that problem as well. So, just too much stuff coming out.
Too many good games.
Yeah, and some not-so-good games.
Yeah.
And we got Pool Panic.
That one looked really good. It's from Adult Swim Games. Let's see, 100 levels in which everything from jungles to deserts to cities are one giant cartoon game of pool. So it's a pretty weird thing where you're just trying to knock these pool balls around these levels. They're just kind of crazy. It has a really nice art style to it.
Yeah.
Local multiplayer up to 4, and it's first on Switch later this year.
Another time exclusive.
Yeah.
Garage is one that was mentioned here.
Inspired by the gory VHS era of B-movies, it's a top-down shooter set in a gritty underworld. Slay hordes of the living dead using a variety of weapons and skills. First on Switch this spring.
Yeah, first on Switch. That seems to be something we're hearing a lot of.
Yep.
Yeah. We got Bomb Chicken, which is an amazing name.
Yeah. Let's see. It's a fast-paced game, combines action, puzzles, and arcade gameplay. Lay bombs to escape tricky situations. Yeah, I think this one was very much like Bomberman.
Yeah, it does seem
like Well, it's not really Bomberman in the visual style or the way it's set up, but very much using these bombs to get over platforms and get around the level and all that sort of stuff, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
As you're like a big fat chicken.
Yeah. There's that. This one I have heard of, Reigns, Kings, and Queens. Yep. Played this on the phones and the tablets.
Yeah, this is Androids. A combination of the two games to work on the Switch. As you swipe left or right, you can also just use the buttons themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's launching this spring, featuring exclusive local co-op multiplayer mode.
Mm.
I assume you vote. I assume that's what that is.
Yeah, because... yeah, not sure that kind of a game would lend itself well to co-op, but okay.
Yeah, it seems more like a party thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, let's... No, we don't want to go with this devil guy.
Yeah.
Or, yes, we do. You know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised how compelling that game is, considering all you do is swipe left or right. And, yeah, it's kind of fun, and then you die, mm-hmm. and then you start over again, and then you die some more.
Yeah, it's fun to see how... terribly things can go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense too. I guess we'll go this way. Oh shit, I've been decapitated.
Yeah. So yeah, that will happen often. So Pwd is up next.
Yeah, that is a kind of 3D platforming adventure game, like co-op puzzle stuff. Yeah, it looked pretty cool. I think it's launching this spring. I guess it's not exclusive.
Mm.
But yeah, it's inspired by Norwegian art and culture. So it has a really nice art style to it
mm-hmm.
that you typically don't see.
Yep. And then The Messenger. Not the Tea Party song, but that's
no.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it is a platformer that transforms from 8-bit to 16-bit. You get upgrades and abilities and levels, speedrunning stuff. That game looked pretty good. Though also kind of, there's a million 8-bit to 16-bit kind of platformers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of looks a little bit Ninja Gaiden-esque.
Yeah.
But with it going a bit crazier than that.
Mm.
Yeah. It still looks pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, got no issue with it.
Yeah, I guess your character is just called Ninja.
Yeah.
It's just what it shows in the top corner. Just
generic.
Ninja. Yep, you're Ninja.
Mm. Okay. And Bad North, which is another...
Yeah, that's kind of a strategy game with a little bit of real-time strategy kind of in it, with a bit of roguelike elements as well. So kind of shoring up defenses, protecting your citizens, building defenses and all that sort of stuff. That's first on Nintendo Switch this summer. Yep.
Yeah, so that looks pretty good. And let me get to the last handful here, which were actually the bigger ones.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. First one was Phantasy Strike.
Yes. This is David Sirlin's new project.
Yep.
Mm.
It's a very simplistic fighting game made to teach incoming players simple move properties, matchups, neutral game, things like that that will carry over to anything else that you play.
A lot of people have kind of described this as my first fighting game, but I think that sells it way short.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like it's meant more to be a trainer to actually, you know, teach you the tactics, the strategies, the mechanics that, you know, like you said, will carry over to other games. The only thing you don't have to worry about too much is execution, and you know that's stuff that you'll have to put time into to get.
Yeah,
you know.
But that will come with time. Whereas a lot of people will actually skip over the neutral game and general matchup information to get to that execution point, and I think that hamstrings a lot of players right out of the gate.
Yeah.
So I do like that. I still personally maintain that we already have a My First Fighting game out there in the form of Hyper Fighting. But it's 2018. That's not going to be a lot of people's first fighting game anymore.
Nope.
So Phantasy Strike is a hell of a good starting point for people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good one. That's a good get for Nintendo, for sure.
It'll lend itself really well to portable mode.
Yeah,
so that's coming to Switch this summer. I don't see any exclusivity to it.
No, I think so it's probably going to everything.
Yeah.
Then we got a remaster of Mark of the Ninja, which is coming along.
And finally, fuck.
That's yeah.
It's like that game kind of got buried a bit on XBLA. Mm-hmm. It also came to Steam, but it's like that should have been on PS4 and Xbox One and, a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in like that first year or two of those consoles.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I assume this will also be coming to those as well. I was looking at Clay's Twitter and like, yeah, we'll have more about this announcement next week or so.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't think I saw exclusive for this one.
So. No, there's no exclusive. It's coming this fall. Hmm. Yeah, I assume they're not going to be. They're going to try and get it out there so they can potentially make a sequel. Yeah.
All of the things.
Yeah, that game's really good. If people have not played it, it's kind of Metroid-esque, but it's smaller. You go through specific levels.
Hmm.
There are just multiple paths to get around.
Yeah. So there's that. Then we got news of Lumines Remastered.
Yes.
And I saw a lot of people like, oh, this is really good. This would be a really good fit for a portable. Like, no shit, it was a portable game.
That's what it was made for.
Launched on the PSP, you know? Yeah. You might have heard of it. Oh, no, nobody bought a PSP, so that's a problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is coming to everything, PS4, Xbox One, Steam, and Switch. It has trans vibrator support.
Oh, yes.
Not specific support of the vibrator, but you can stick the Joy-Cons and sync up multiples and stick them wherever it feels good. I guess they were showing it off at GDC and having people like put their foot on top of one of the Joy-Cons, that sort of thing. good thing to do in like a convention sense.
From the fine folks who brought your res.
You can also do this with the PS4 and Xbox One controllers, so you can have extra controllers and stick them in your pants if you want.
Do that, please.
Yeah. Yes, please don't.
Yeah. Let's see, 40 skins. It's got challenge mode, time attack, skin edit, puzzle mode, mission mode versus CPU, and local two-player mode. No online.
Is a remake of the first Lumines, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it should have all the skins from the original.
Are they doing anything about that damnable 6-digit limit on the high scores?
I don't know. I don't know if they actually mentioned that specifically anywhere.
Because Lumines Plus on the PS2 was a remake of the first Lumines, and that still had the, your score still topped off at all nines. And so...
Yeah. I don't know. I had to look at screenshots specifically to see if they have high scores on that, but I don't know. It probably does. And the highest one I see is like 100,000. So I don't know. It's cool that Enhance has rights to make this game.
Yeah.
Because that was published by Ubisoft and they had control of it for a while. But maybe they're still licensing it from them, sort of the way that Shenmue 3 is licensed from Sega. Even though they're not funding it.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I know I'll be pretty much buying this one. So
yeah.
That
is a thing that is going to happen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe multiple times. I don't know. And then we got West of Loathing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. On Lumines, that's out in May. Oh. So that's almost here.
Yeah, forgot about that.
Yep.
May. Crap.
Everything's
also
in May.
Everything's
April
in May,
and May.
That's also when the Street Fighter 30th anniversary is coming out.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
God damn it.
Anyway. Yep. We are going to be Polar in May.
Yep. Mentioned West of Loathing.
Which is a silly RPG, adventure RPG, with stick figures.
Yep.
It definitely looks exactly as you would expect it. It definitely plays off of just being silly as well. Lots of silly walks and looks and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it's just a fun, silly game. Look forward to checking this out. Let's see. It is a console exclusive this spring. Launches console exclusive. So
console exclusive, which means Switch and then PC.
It'll probably come to the others at some point. I imagine there's probably not a huge delay in that. It's not the sort of game you hang your hat on. It's like, we're getting this for a whole year.
Yeah.
Keeping it from the others.
Yeah.
It's going to sell the system. No, it's not.
And then finally, the Banner Saga 3, which the Banner Saga, if you're not familiar with, is really good.
Also bringing the other two games over in the near future.
Yeah.
And your story choices and all that will carry over.
Yeah.
So you're going to be poor just trying to get all three of those games.
Oh, yeah.
I think those are at least $20 each.
Yeah.
Mm.
To be fair, they do go on sale quite often, so you might be able to get a deal there. So.
Yeah, though probably not for a while on Switch.
Yeah, true. So,
if they were smart, they'd have a bundle of the first two.
Yeah.
Maybe $40.
Yeah. They might end up doing that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the 3 is out this summer.
Yeah. So that was pretty much the extent of the Nindy Showcase. A lot of stuff there.
Yeah.
A big variety of stuff, which, we're starting to expect now on the Switch. It seems to be kind of a platform for all people. And I don't think Nintendo has done that effectively. I'm going to say it.
Their indie policies have been bad since the Wii.
Yeah.
Wii required you to have a physical office location to be able to work on indie games for them. It's like, what? Most of these people are working out of their houses.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're renting a house together to work on a game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's like, you guys are expecting way too much out of indies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That got a bit better for the Wii U, but still.
But that didn't sell.
Yeah,
there was not much of an audience. It was the indies that were very enthusiastic about being on a Nintendo platform.
Mm-hmm.
And then trash people.
Yeah. So that's, good stuff for the Switch. There goes all of your money, or at least most of it. Let's move on to our other topics of the day. We'll start off with Sea of Thieves, which launched this week, and it launched to server problems.
Because of course it did.
I experienced that when I was playing it initially. I was just warping around a lot, which is annoying when you're on like piers.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, I'm just going to go run to my ship. Oh, I just fell in the water. Or I'm trying to get into this door of this merchant. I'm just running into the wall.
Yeah.
That was real annoying.
Yeah. But one thing that isn't annoying was Rare's response to the problems.
Yeah.
And they did something that few developers ever do. And that's to go, okay, we've got problems. This is what they are. Here's what our plans are to fix them. Some of these will require patches. Some of them are going to be server-side stuff that we can take care of. You don't have to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
They even offered like some workarounds where it was like, well, okay, if you're having matchmaking problems and you can't get into a game, try joining a game because the matchmaking process for creating and joining are different.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, basically. I think the transparency here is like, well, it's really good.
Yeah.
It shows that this is a developer that actually does give a fuck about what they're doing. They do listen to their community, thanks to the day one patch that was in the game. I don't know if you saw that, Chris.
I saw people like, oh, now I'm going to buy the game. It's like, that's a little bit much for a good joke, like spending $60 for a joke. I was like, okay.
Well, you can subscribe to to Xbox Game Pass and play it there.
But the people I saw were specifically like, I'm going to go buy the game.
Yeah.
As far as the actual game goes, though, it's been getting kind of mixed.
Yeah, it's very much a game that is clearly in early access.
Yeah.
It's not really done, in a sense. It's
definitely not done.
Yeah, because I jumped in, and there have been some new stuff since the previous final beta they put out that I had played. So the third faction of quests had actually been put in there, as well as one of the merchants that had just an empty room I finally was able to get into that. And yeah, that, there's like a new set of quests, which is all about gathering animals. And I managed to not notice that it's like, oh, go to a merchant and get your crates. And I did. I left. I was like, where the hell do I get chickens? Because I've never seen chickens in any of the alphas or betas.
Yeah.
I found an animal with pigs on it, but like, that's not a chicken. So I'm having to go all the way back to the outpost picking up a crate so I could put chickens in it, and I figure out where the hell I get chickens. That's kind of annoying. Because it's like, because I haven't seen any, and they don't necessarily point out anything, because every other quest where it's like, oh, go get this treasure chest, it gives you a map of an island, and you can look at the main map. Like, okay, that island is over here, so we're going to just have to go, you know, southeast to go get it. Whereas this is just like, go find this thing we need.
Yeah.
It's like really annoying. But like,
yeah, we're not going to tell you where it is. Figure it out for yourself.
And I'm not sure what the progress is going to be like, the progression. Because the main thing you're doing is getting gold coins, putting up your supplies, and then, you know, potentially just buying cosmetic stuff. Getting your ship to look a bit nicer, having specific stuff, getting, you know, specific styles of clothes and others, and the various tools you have and guns and all that. But it doesn't really seem to act any differently or have any bonuses or anything like that. And that's where I think it's going to kind of lose people. It's like, what are we working towards beyond just
they really
wanting to play
part clear.
Of the game? Because if you're not bought into the idea of like a pirate sandbox thing, then I don't know that there's much more draw to it.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of people like comparing it to No Man's Sky, which I can definitely see. Though I would say the draw of No Man's Sky for me was I love space. Like exploring the huge variety of things that could be generated for that universe.
Yeah.
And this is just the same map over and over again. And like, occasionally those skeletons will be like gold skeletons that are harder to kill. That's about as much variety in enemies as they have in there right now.
Yeah.
Except for occasional, like, Kraken attack or whatever it is. But it's the sort of game that they're definitely building towards just adding more stuff over time, sort of the way that Ubisoft has done with a lot of their games.
Yeah.
It's like it starts out, probably has issues and things that are keeping it from being at its full potential, but they just keep listening to the players and have their own ideas for ways to improve it, and it eventually gets there.
Yeah.
But it might be, you know, a year or so out. Where it's like, then, you know, if you want to buy it, you know, it'll probably be $20-$30.
Yeah.
Which is better bargain than, you know, spending $60 being like, well, where's the rest of the game?
Yeah. But there's no subscription cost or anything, well, apart from the Xbox Live that you're going to need to play it, but... Or if you play it on PC, you're not going to even need that. So
unless you subscribe to Game Pass to get it.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I have hope for this one. Actually, it's right now it's kind of a, like you said, a pirate sandbox. It's basically for it's if you can get a group of maybe four friends together, and just go and do really stupid shit. Fun doing it, you know.
Yeah,
then that's good.
Yeah, definitely seems like a good streaming YouTube game sort of thing. Which isn't a huge surprise because one of the first gameplay trailers they put out was of people sort of playing the game and just role playing and all that stuff. If you remember that from E3 a couple years ago, I was like, I don't know if I want this game anymore. If these are going to be the kind of people I'm going to run into, it's going to be interesting to see how it develops over time.
Yeah. So move on from here. So at GDC this year, the Game Workers Unite Union has announced its existence.
Yep.
Good.
This is long overdue, I would say.
Good God. I mean, if they're it's the whole the way the game developers work under some of the worst conditions in the tech industry. You know, you're not paid, you know, compared to the work you do, you're really not paid enough. And you have to work these insane hours. And, you know, because you're basically the whole industry you're working in, it is based on the notion that you love your work so much that you're willing to put in these insane hours.
Yeah.
And not get
exploit that.
Yeah. And, you know, crunch time. Crunch time should not exist. It just shouldn't. You know, if you schedule your workflow well enough, it should not be an issue. But all of these major game developers do it.
Yeah, definitely. It's
not for long, apparently.
Yeah, so this specific union is kind of in their early stages of setting up. They're just trying to reach out to people, sort of find out, because they have a lot of different regions they want to be talking to. Obviously, there is a lot of fluidity in terms of the types of jobs that are in the gaming industry, so it's kind of hard to nail down specific demands related to each of those jobs because people do different things in different places. And they're trying to be fluid right now, trying to gather up support and interest and figure out sort of what they need to do and sort of how to do that stuff. Yeah, so it's very much a work in progress right now for them.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes, and we'll see how the major publishers react to this, because it's possible that if this starts getting momentum, then you know, your major publishers might start looking at, like, well, if you're a member of that union, we're just not going to hire you.
And then we're going to start dealing with strikes and walkouts and lockouts and
all that fun stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Organized labor ain't no joke. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, don't be a filthy scab. That's all I'm going to say.
Don't be a filthy employer, EA.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things, like, compared to, like, the movie industry, there's a lot more ability for people that might work at, like, an EA or a 2K or, you know, Activision or whatever, just say, you know what, we're tired, we're just going to go and do our own thing.
Yeah.
And go out and be indie and actually be able to have more success there.
Yeah.
And more control over their own future.
Yeah.
And that's going to be hard for this union to be able to cover indies as well.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot more hands-on for the handful of people that might work at a studio versus hundreds or thousands at, you know, Ubisoft and the other companies. So they're going to definitely have their work cut out for them trying to figure out a way to cover as many people as they can.
Yeah. But at least the steps are being taken now, so that's that's a good thing in general. Next up, the Atari box doesn't exist anymore, except now it's called the Atari VCS.
Well,
yeah, it's still a thing. It was kind of shown at GDC, and I mean shown as in you could look at the case for it. They had, what we do know about it so far is that it has four USB ports. It has an HDMI output. In 2018, I would fucking hope so.
I would hope so.
Yeah. It's also able to connect to controllers wirelessly, so I'm assuming Bluetooth.
It has a Xbox-style controller as well as a classic-style joystick.
Yep.
I do like that controller.
That is a very nice controller.
I kind of wish there was more color to it than just, hey, it's black and it's like neon orange.
Yeah.
It makes it very much look... Yeah, it also makes it look like every other Android box. Like all those third-party controllers you saw, the Ouya and all that.
Yeah.
Well, the Ouya had more control, more colors than this thing.
Yeah. So there's that.
It's really weird looking. The D-pad
doesn't look great. It looks Atari.
Yeah, it definitely looks Atari. I mean, I can't fault the look of it. I actually like the look of it.
Yeah.
But $300 for something that will play Atari games and then we don't know what else?
It has an open Linux OS, and they also say hot new indie titles. Which, what the hell does that mean?
We don't know.
Like, you didn't give us names. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Please develop for us, please. Oh, yeah, this is... The fact that they're calling it the VCS is like, yeah, we're going to sell that nostalgia as hard as we can. Because remember,
for those who don't know, the VCS was the 2600 before it was the 2600.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, there's that. And for $300, you could get a base PS4 or Xbox One with a game or two, depending on when you buy. Mm-hmm.
Or a Switch.
Or a Switch.
Like a thing that has actual hot new indie games.
Yeah. So
this comes off as like a Steam box all over again.
Yeah, a Steam box with we don't even know if it's even going to have Steam support. So, I don't know. I would like to like it, but it just still feels really scammy to me. And I have to look at the that back IO panel because I have a sneaking suspicion I can know what's in it right now. Wouldn't be surprised if that prototype had a Raspberry Pi 3 in there, but that'd be. No, that wouldn't be.
$300.
Yeah, $300. I mean, if they were to just sell the case and the controllers and like let me put whatever the fuck I wanted into it for like $150, I wouldn't actually mind paying that, to be honest. Just let me make it what I want it to be. Yeah, but no.
Yeah, like if you could pair the joystick and the controller to a PC or Raspberry Pi or whatever.
Well, it's really going to be Bluetooth, so you'd probably be able to do that anyway.
Yeah.
Probably even run on a Switch then, right?
Yeah, I would assume so.
Yeah. As long as these sticks are more durable than the originals.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the original Atari joystick would, could be used as a deadly weapon. The original ones, but anyway. So I have no hope that this is actually going to be anything good. It still feels like a scam to me, and I wish
abandon hope, all you who enter here.
Yeah, save your $300, buy a Switch.
Yep.
So there. That's our public service announcement.
If there's an 8th gen console you're still missing, now's the time.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So finally, our last story, and I'll just turn this one over to you, Pat.
Okay, so the fighting game community, the tournament scene. As it is today, was built on a small handful of major tournaments that eventually grew and have waxed and waned ever since. You had Midwest Championships, Northeast Championships, East Coast Championships, Texas Showdown, Final Round. And with this past weekend, it looks like the last of those originals, Final Round, is no longer a thing. A few years ago, they kind of had a bad outing. The venue was terrible, and the whole thing kind of interfered with the schedule and what have you. And they really took a huge PR hit for it. And even though Larry Dixon, the tournament organizer, has bent over backwards to try and fix all these issues and has done a bang-up job these last few years of getting Final Round in a good place again. Attendance seems to show that it has not actually recovered from that. And so he made the announcement at the end of Final Round this past weekend that this year's Final Round event was going to be the last. Mm. It's a shame because it's always a good event. It's always one of the most prominent, important dates on the fighting game community calendar, sort of like opening day for fighting games. I wish Lee was here this week because he's very closely tied to this series of events. He's worked security at a lot of them. He's played at it. But, yeah, it looks like we've lost the last of our original tournaments. And, having been a tournament organizer myself in a much lesser role than Larry, I can say that it's extremely stressful and takes a lot out of you. And it's not something that you can do forever.
Yeah.
So I definitely support his decision. I wish it was I wish that Final Round had been able to rebound better than it had. over the last couple of years, because, like I said, it is a great event. It is something that should be a permanent institution in the community. But you had some people outside of that situation that were kind of drumming up drama, and that, I'm not going to name names, but that was a huge detrimental factor, especially as it was happening. And so Larry says that he's going to be working on the Fall Classic, and then that'll be his last event as a tournament organizer. But I hope that he finds a way to stay involved somehow without basically without, you know, bleeding himself dry in the process, because he's a good guy and a good part of the community. And
kind of sad to see, you know, it's really like the end of an era at this point.
It is,
you know, it was, I think Final Round was one of the last, no, the last actually.
Yeah.
Of the originals.
Yep. And so, yeah, now, all the major events on the calendar are more recent additions. So, I think Evo is the oldest tournament series going now.
Yeah. Well, like you said, we wish Larry the best and whatever he ends up doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be good, whatever it is.
Yeah.
All right.
Finally, on that kind of sad note, we'll get to our picks of the week, and I'll start us off with something completely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
If you happen to have, if you happen to live in a place where you get winter, you may need heating. It would be nice if maybe your heating could pay for itself. So, this company called Kernel, I think that's how it's spelled, have developed the QC1 space heater, which is a space heater. It's got a very stylish design. It actually looks quite nice. It's a smart device that connects with your smartphone, and you can control it, set the temperature, and do everything you want through there. And it mines cryptocurrency. Yeah, so your heater can make you money and heat your room while it's doing so.
Mm-hmm. You know, as long as, you know, whatever cryptocurrency you're using doesn't suddenly plummet in value.
Yeah,
well, it's able to mine Bitcoin, Ethereum, you know, Monero, whatever the hell happens to be. Mm-hmm. That's just, you know, a software update. If you need to mine other currencies, it can do that too. Your price for this amazing technology is a cool $3,600.
Nope.
Just nope. Given that they say it will probably make about $120 a month, you're going to be paying for that for a while.
Yeah.
So, don't buy this. Unless, of course, you want two graphics cards that are overclocked, because, it has two Radeon RX 580s sitting in there making lots of heat for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as ridiculous as it sounds. This is why graphics cards are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it almost kind of sounds like you could just buy this thing and rip out the cards. Except it wouldn't really... Probably money doesn't work out, but...
Oh, no, it definitely wouldn't work out, because you buy two RX 580s, would probably only cost you about maybe $1,800, so you'd still be paying more. So, don't buy this unless you have a lot more money than sense.
There are a lot of people that do.
That's true.
A lot of people do, yeah.
Because they're trying to set up mining centers in various small towns to use up whatever excess power they have for this stuff.
Plattsburgh just kind of put a moratorium on this stuff, because everybody's electricity bill was going up by a lot. So it's like, cryptocurrency, it's a thing.
It's kind of a threat to the world, like global warming is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's my ridiculousness for the day. How about you, Pat?
So the Sonic fan community, the development community, has done some pretty good work over the years, obviously to the point that Sega hired some of them to make Sonic Mania.
Mm-hmm.
And there is another big project in the works coming out of this community called Sonic Maker,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what it says on the tin. It's pretty self-explanatory. There mm-hmm. is a demo build out there right now for you to download and try. And, you know, we'll see what comes of it, but this is probably going to be the thing that that enables the next big wave of Sonic fan content.
Mm-hmm.
And
it might also be Sega's next game that may be a very clever way of marketing it.
Mm-hmm.
That would be amusing.
I mean, they've...
Or at the very least, they'll buy it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like you said, it wouldn't be the first time.
Nope.
So, this is actually really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mario Maker worked so well, you can't imagine why they wouldn't be able to do the same thing with Sonic. So.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it'll be a lot more intuitive than Sonic 2 Editor, so there's that, too.
Yeah. All right, so Brandon, you got something?
Yeah, so everybody remembers the original Street Fighter. Not Street Fighter 2, the original Street Fighter. The one that started off. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was really popular when it came out in the arcades. It also originally came with pressure-sensitive buttons that would basically break your knuckles.
Yeah, because there was always that one guy that would pull the pads off.
Mm-hmm. But in its time, it was really successful. And, of course, is the reason we eventually got a proper Street Fighter 2, which basically surpassed everything that game did and more. So much so that pretty much everybody remembers Street Fighter 2, and very few people remember the original Street Fighter.
Yeah. Don't play that game.
But for its time, it was really successful and introduced a lot of the classic tropes that would become associated with Street Fighter. So, as you can imagine, being such a popular arcade game in its time, it was basically ported to just about pretty much every format that could accept it. Including, in Europe especially, you know, the Spectrum, Commodore, and even the Atari ST. And the Atari ST, its port was garbage. Like, it was legit garbage. There was very little sound.
Actually, that might be merciful.
Yeah.
There were actually two ports on the SD.
Yeah.
One of them... Oh, wait, no, that was a C64 that ended up getting two ports for some reason.
And so, you know, despite it being a shit port, it sold really well. So... the guys who developed that game actually went to Capcom and suggested, hey, you know, we can take the original sort of bulk, you know, the sort of guts of the Street Fighter port, and we can make a sequel to it, Street Fighter 2, if you will. Would Capcom be okay with that? And Capcom were like, no. Nope, don't. It sucks. It's off.
Yeah.
So the guys who did it, they was like, you know what? Screw these guys. We're going to make our own Street Fighter with blackjack and hookers.
And they did.
And they did. And it's not called Street Fighter, but it's definitely based on Street. It's called Human Killing Machine.
Well, and
yeah, and you play a... Yeah, first of all, remember how in the original Street Fighter you only could play one character? You know, single player. It was Ryu. Unless you were doing one-on-one, in which case one would play Ken. They don't have one-on-one in this game. You can only play one character. It's a Korean kickboxer. And just like in the original Street Fighter, he goes all over the world fighting ridiculous characters. And in some weird way, some of these are even more offensive stereotypes.
Yes.
Than the original Street Fighter. Like one of them, you end up in the Soviet Union and you end up fighting a Russian soldier who fights you with a hunting rifle. which he uses as a melee weapon for some reason.
Hmm.
Like, doesn't even shoot it. And then you have to fight his dog.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Okay, then.
Then you go over to Germany, where you fight two guys named Hans and Franz. One of them is a waiter who always has like a drinks platter that he's carrying around, and he throws wine bottles at you. And the other dude is kind of a palate swap, except he's blonde, has a mustache, and wears lederhosen. Then you go off to Spain, and you fight a bullfighter. And then, of course, when you fight the bullfighter, who else do you have to fight afterwards?
The bull.
The bull, yeah. And then you go...
Of course, U.S. Gold is involved in it.
Yep, U.S. Gold are the guys who did this.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And then finally, the last place you go is Belarus. Oh, no, wait. Actually, you go to Amsterdam, and you have to fight a couple of prostitutes. One of whom I'm pretty sure is a tranny prostitute.
Yeah.
And then you have to go to Belarus, and you fight a couple of terrorists.
Hmm.
One of whom is a very obvious Arab stereotype. And then you have to fight the last boss, which is this big, giant Russian dude who's like twice your height and carries a missile on his back for some reason.
Yeah.
And he only has like 3 animation frames.
Yep.
Capcom dodged a grenade here.
Yeah.
yeah, this was the level of quality we were dealing with back then.
Yeah, so there's a video on YouTube about it you can watch. Yeah, like we said, YouTube dodged Capcom dodged a serious bullet here.
Yeah,
the game didn't even have like the stage was literally that you fought in was literally like one frame. There was no scrolling at all.
Yeah. And the amazing mechanic of this game was that the enemies would only have to beat you twice to lose.
I think it was like actually 3. Well, it was like best out of 3, but if you played, you had to do best out of 5.
Yeah, if you lost twice, you were done.
Yeah.
But to win, you would have to beat them 3 times.
Yep. It was like, and apparently, like, it would, the amount that you had to do to fight them to win went up or down, considering on whether or not you were, quote-unquote, weak or strong.
Yeah.
Am I seeing enemies healing?
Yep.
Yep.
But that's not intentional. That's just because the programming was such garbage.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, this is it's crap. TR Tech. I think they're still around, but I haven't.
Yeah, they make mobile games now.
Oh.
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
For some weird reason, I do want to see some of these characters in like show up in like a Street Fighter hack or mod or something.
Well, I'm sure the Mugen community has probably already done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to look at that. Well, actually, I don't really want to look at Mugen anymore because, wow, these people just go way over the top with their compilations.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, let's just throw all that crap.
Yeah, it's where balance goes to die. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I'm guessing this is a full recommendation that everybody should play this game.
Oh, yeah, 10-10. Would play again.
Game of the year.
Game of the decade.
Jesus Christ.
All right. So, Chris, what do you got?
Yeah, so we talked earlier about the oncoming backlog you're going to be getting on the Switch. Figure there's a good time to start building up now.
Mm-hmm.
They have a pretty good sale going on the Switch eShop that I guess is probably related to Easter coming up.
Because
mm-hmm. Most of these deals don't end until about a week or 2 after that. Mm-hmm. But they got a bunch of stuff here that people should definitely check out if they need some new stuff to play on their Switch. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Blossom Tales, The Sleeping King. That game is very much Link to the Past. It is on sale for $12.74. There's a Smash-style fighter called Brawlout. It's $15.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be pretty good. There's a roguelike called Goner. It's $7 on sale.
Mm-hmm.
That game's pretty good. Crypt of the Necrodancers, also on sale for $15. Let's see, L.A. Noire, there's Kimiko. It's a game that came out very early on the Switch. Mm-hmm. That's $3 on sale, down from $5. Lego has a few of their games on sale, Lego Worlds, Lego City Undercover, Marvel Super Heroes 2, and the Ninjago movie video game. Let's see, NBA 2K18 has some stuff on sale, Letter Quest Remastered, Oceanhorn, Monster of Uncharted Seas, that's pretty good. Kind of a weird mix of the 3D Zelda games, but in the style of like Link to the Past. So there's a bit of 3D to it, but kind of the physics of items is a little bit 3D. So you kind of get around levels a little bit by messing with the physics. It's pretty good. Not super great, but it's a pretty good game on the Switch. Rocket League is $15. That is, I think all the DLC is on sale as well for the various cars for people that want to get that. Portal Knights is on sale. Scribblenauts Showdown just came out. And that just came out on the 6th. It's half off. So I'm guessing something happened or it's not doing as well as they thought.
Yeah.
Let's see. Spellspire, that'll be the next 10 tons of Switch game that I'll be featuring. That is on sale for $6.69. Let's see. The SteamWorld games are all on sale on all three platforms, Switch, Wii U, and 3DS. Dig is half off for $5. SteamWorld Dig 2 is $15, and Heist is also $15. All three of those games are really good. People should definitely check out if they have not tried any of them. Let's see, Jackbox Party Pack 2 is on sale for $16. Thumper is $12. That game is really good. I assume it's good on the Switch. There's Vostok Inc., which I mentioned on Let's Weekend. That is $12 here. Yeah, some good stuff. Splasher is also on here. It's a platformer, probably a little bit like Super Meat Boy, but a little bit more forgiving.
I've heard good things about Splasher.
Yeah. Yeah, so definitely some good stuff if you need some new nice stuff to play on the Switch while you're waiting for it to warm up. That still's not coming anytime soon.
All right, so I think we've got a show, folks. I'd like to remind everybody that you can check us out at smashpad.com or facebook.com/smashpad, because we're there too. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite podcast aggregator. So with that, I am Filippo Genofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Logi.
And we'll see you next week on the Day Zero update.
And stay far away from human killing machine.
Yes.